Here's a look at our top stories this hour. The Russian president calls for expansion of comprehensive relations with North Korea, saying it will strengthen security and stability of the Korean Peninsula. Syria says its air defenses have intercepted Israeli missiles over Damascus and Tartus provinces, shooting down most of incoming projectiles. Also, hundreds of firefighters battle a wildfire in northern Spain that has forced hundreds to flee their homes in devastated swaths of land. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Russian President Vladimir Putin has called for expanding bilateral ties with North Korea. Putin, in a letter to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, said the two countries will expand their comprehensive and constructive bilateral relations with common efforts. The Russian president, in his letter to Kim on North Korea's Liberation Day, underlined that it will be in the interest of both Moscow and Pyongyang to form closer bonds. Putin added the expansion of ties would also be beneficial for the security and the stability of the Korean Peninsula and the northeastern Asian region. The North Korean leader also sent a letter to Putin. He welcomed the call and said their cooperation would frustrate those who prefer threats and provocations. Both countries are currently under crippling Western sanctions. Israel carries out fresh missile strikes on Syria, targeting areas near the capital Damascus as well as Tartus, a city on the Mediterranean coast. According to the Syrian military, three people were killed and three others wounded in the strikes hitting the vicinity of Tartus. Syrian air defenses reportedly intercepted some of the incoming missiles over Tartus. Fresh Israeli airstrikes were launched from over Lebanon. Israel frequently carries out missile strikes on Syria. Damascus has time and again warned against the regime's acts of aggression. The Syrian government also previously lodged official complaints with the UN and other international bodies about the Israeli violation. Today marks the 16th anniversary of Lebanon's victory in its 33-day war against the Israeli regime. The occasion is annually commemorated by holding celebrations, but this year's ceremonies have been postponed due to the Muslim mourning month Muharram. The 2006 war began with Israeli airstrikes against Lebanese cities in July and ended by a UN-backed ceasefire. The aggression killed over 1,200 people, mostly civilians in Lebanon, and resulted in the demolition of vital infrastructure there. Israel had also launched a war on Lebanon in 2000. On both occasions, however, Hezbollah resistance fighters defeated the Israeli forces and Tel Aviv was forced to retreat without achieving any of its objectives. Iraq's top judicial body rejects a request by top cleric Muqtada Assad to dissolve the parliament, a decision which could heighten political tensions in the country. Iraq's Supreme Judicial Council says it lacks authority to dissolve parliament. The body says political groups shouldn't get the judiciary involved in their rivalries. On Wednesday, Saab gave the judicial body 1 week to dismiss the legislature in order for new elections to happen. Last night, he also called on his followers to be ready for massive protests all over Iraq. Saab's supporters late last month stormed parliament, holding a sit-in inside and then outside the building. The Iraqi parliament has exceeded the constitutional timeline for forming a new government following elections in October last year. Spain is struggling with another fast-moving wildfire, this time in the province of Zaragoza, threatening homes and forcing evacuation. The fire, which started in the town of Anandamancayo on Saturday, has already consumed 8,000 hectares and forced some 1,500 people to flee. Around 300 firefighters, including military personnel, have been deployed to contain the blaze amid soaring temperatures and turbulent winds. The director of Natural Environment and Forestry Management has described the situation as critical, saying he is concerned about the safety of the Moncayo National Park. Last month, Spain reported several wildfires, including on the Canary Island as well as in Catalonia. Police later arrested a man suspected of starting three blazes. In the United States, a man has crashed his car into a barricade near the Capitol building and fired a handgun in the air before fatally shooting himself. Police say the man, identified as Richard York from Delaware, died in an apparent suicide early on Sunday. They say Richard was seriously injured, but was trying to get out of the car that had just been engulfed in flames. Officers responded to the sound of the gunfire, but it was too late to save the man. Details remain sketchy at this point. It's still not clear why he chose to drive to the Capitol complex. In recent years, the United States has fought wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, and those are just the ones that Pentagon has officially acknowledged. The actual scope of American war-making is much wider. And new research has revealed that the U.S. has undertaken almost 400 military interventions since its founding in 1776 until 2019.
How many wars is the United States fighting right now? Well, the answer is zero, as under the Constitution, Congress must declare war, and the last countries that Congress declared war on were Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary in 1942. 8 decades and what seems to be zero wars. Any countries with such a record must be one of the most peaceful places on Earth. But as history has shown, this is not the case with the US, as it is fighting and has waged wars on many countries across the world. It just doesn't want to call them wars. Over the last 20 years, the US has dropped an average of 46 bombs and missiles on other countries each day. And now, a new study has revealed that a quarter of the 400 wars which the US has sugarcoated in terms such as a military-led operation, police actions, or humanitarian interventions have taken place in West Asia and Africa. So it seems that as Americans struggle to address urgent needs at home, their governments have committed them to endless wars in an attempt to support what seems to be one of the key pillars of the U.S., the military-industrial complex.
The U.S. has tried to be on the first hand with an image of also being seen as a global policeman, which came and, of course, as some have argued, it's done more harm than good. When you look into the global dominance and production of all these weapons and also use of it in terms of interventions, you see a situation whereby U.S. wants to be the first, to be seen the most powerful nation in the world, to be seen as the one that can intervene and maybe make a difference, whichever difference whose interest it serves. Of course, they will have to define that. It's a bit a gray area. You cannot define it very clearly.
At least 41 people have been killed in a huge fire at a church in Egypt's second largest city, Giza. Most of those killed were reportedly children. Dozens were also injured. Police say an initial investigation blames an electrical short circuit. Some 5,000 worshippers are said to have gathered for mass when the blaze erupted. It blocked an entrance to the church, causing a stampede. Fire services say the blaze is now under control. Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, called the incident a tragic accident. In March last year, at least 20 people died in a blaze in a textile factory in the capital, Cairo. At least 3 people have been killed after blasts ripped through a fireworks warehouse in the Armenian capital of Yerevan. Some 60 people have also been injured in the explosions, which have sparked a huge fire in a popular retail market. Local officials say there are an unknown number of people trapped under the rubble. Fireworks continue to detonate, making it difficult to contain the blaze and rescue the victims. It was not immediately clear what caused the fireworks to detonate. Tensions between China and the U.S. are set to rise even further over Taiwan. Washington has sent a delegation of lawmakers to Taipei days after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit there outraged Beijing. In this episode of the News Review program, we have discussed the consequences of Washington's moves with our guests. Take a listen.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, a delegation of U.S. lawmakers has arrived in Taiwan for a 2-day visit despite escalating tensions between Washington and Beijing over the island. The de facto U.S. embassy in Taipei says the trip is part of a larger visit to the Indo-Pacific region. The group plans to meet with the president and other senior Taiwanese leaders. Taiwan's presidential office says bilateral trade and relations as well as regional security, will be discussed. The trip comes 12 days after a controversial visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. That triggered an angry reaction from China. Beijing imposed sanctions on Pelosi and launched its biggest ever military drills around Taiwan. China claims the island as its own territory and has repeatedly warned against the island's growing ties with the U.S. To discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst, and also Mike Bellington from the Asia Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for joining us on this edition. So, Mr. Bellington, do you think that, basically, what kind of response could we expect from China now that this has happened?
Well, it's not going to be in response to the congressional visit per se, just as their response to Pelosi's visit will be carried out over time. But I think you, as Ray said, I think the Chinese recognize that stop this through their relations with Joe Biden, who is clearly not running the show. The problem is that this is part of a broader policy of decoupling from China, which is absolutely insane. Even today, you had five major Chinese state companies, petro and chemical companies, announcing they're going to delist from the U.S. stock exchange. You had the U.S. coerce Latvia and Estonia into breaking off of the Central and Eastern Europe-China agreements. The idea of decoupling from China is even more insane and suicidal than the suicidal sanctions against Russia, which everybody now knows are doing far, far more damage to the Western economies and devastating damage to the global South than it is to Russia and China, who are, with the support of almost all the developing sector nations, are putting together, by being forced to put together, a whole new financial since the West is insanely breaking down the global systems that existed and allowed for extensive trade and cooperation with Russia and China in the past. This is a Malthusian green policy in the West of self-destruction, of depopulation, of deindustrialization. And the sanctions policies, which supposedly are over geopolitics, actually go hand in hand with the self-destructive Green New Deal in the West, which is it's just leading towards a global hyperinflationary collapse of the Western financial system, the dollar-based system, and can only be seen as suicidal and has to be reformed, as the LaRouche movement is fighting to bring about, by getting the U.S. to sit down with Russia and China and others, and put together a new global financial system that can stop the disintegration that's taking place now.
So, Mr. McGovern, it seems that you would like to make some comments there.
To identify myself with Mike's remarks here, and I would like to point out, ironically, that he is saying the same things as Henry Kissinger, realpolitik impersonated. Now, when Mike says insane, that's precisely what Henry Kissinger is saying. Why is it insane? Well, you have to go back in history. Go back to 1947, right after World War II. The first policy planning document was by George Kennan. And what did he say? I don't want to misquote him, just a couple of sentences here. We have about 50%, that is the U.S., 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of the world's population. Now, our real task in the coming period is to maintain this disparity. The day is not far off when we will have to deal in straight power concepts. Now, that was the U.S. role after the war. What happened 50 years later? Well, George Kennan himself said, this is a terrible idea to enlarge NATO. He knew that much about that. What about now? Well, we have a conflict in Ukraine and we have a conflict with China. Now, what the old Soviets used to call the correlation, the world correlation of forces, has completely shifted. Now, China and Russia are pretty much military as well as other aspects allies. And I don't think that the people advising Joe Biden actually appreciate that and how dangerous it is. Now, one last thought here. The U.S. is committed by its public pronouncements to send warships through the Taiwan Straits within the next couple of weeks, they say. How will China react? Now, I agree with Mike. The Chinese take their time in reacting. But this is a direct affront. This is more important than congressional visitations. How will China react? Well, I have surveyed my China specialists, my friends, and they all tell me, oh, no, there's not much chance. Maybe a 25% chance that China will block or harass the passage of U.S. naval ships. Whoa, that's enough for me. 25% chance? I think somebody ought to tell Biden and the rest of them that this is really, really dangerous.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mike Bellington from the Asia Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review, and Mr. Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst. Thanks to both of you for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Pelosi's recent trip to Taiwan shows U.S. hypocrisy towards the fundamental rights of other nations, says Kahan International Staff Writer in an article published under the heading, China to Teach Pelosi an Unforgettable Lesson. Stay tuned for more. It seems Beijing is determined to teach Washington an unforgettable lesson for the recent violation of China's sovereignty and territorial integrity by the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is clearly guilty of trespassing for visiting Taiwan. Throughout history, trespassing has been regarded as an act of crime, which is punishable under the common laws of each and every country, Even in the United States of America, if someone is caught trespassing on another person's property, he or she is liable to face trouble, including physical thrashing and possibly a civil lawsuit. A week ago, the aging American lady who claims to be a lawgiver openly violated China's law and has entered Taipei without Beijing's authorization, despite warnings from the senior military and civilian officials of her own country. Pelosi's recent trip to Taiwan shows U.S. hypocrisy towards the fundamental rights of other nations. China's Vice Foreign Minister Xi Feng had called her visit as playing with fire, adding, "The move is extremely egregious in nature and the consequences are extremely serious. China will not sit idly by." It is indeed sheer hypocrisy that the U.S., which claims to be a supporter of peace, human rights, and respect for other countries, feels no inhibitions in violating the sovereignty and territorial integrity of world nations. This is not something surprising of a regime which these very days of August, 77 years ago, had committed the unpardonable act of terrorism by dropping two atom bombs within a space of 3 days on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, when World War II was practically over and Japanese troops in full retreat from the southeastern Asian fronts. Washington has never ceased its acts of international terrorism, which in 1970s witnessed the brutal war in Vietnam. Today also it is creating chaos all over the world, whether it is Yemen, Lebanon, Palestine, Iraq, Bahrain, Libya, Ukraine, and East Asia, let alone its complicity in the unabated crimes of the illegal Zionist entity against Palestinians, Lebanese, Syrians, and the rest of humanity. With this in mind, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin has recently blasted Pelosi's visit to Taiwan on the pretext of defending democratic values as a major political provocation and said the visit, which only escalated tensions in the region, had nothing to do with democracy. He called on the U.S. House Speaker to express remorse and apologize for the atrocities committed by the Americans in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, and other countries. Wang pointed out that her visit had nothing to do with democracy and was a political trick that ran counter to the will of 1.4 billion Chinese people, including the Taiwanese, who believe in the One China policy. He added, "If Pelosi cares so much about democracy and human rights, she'd better visit Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, where she could express repentance for the killings of hundreds of thousands of civilians by the U.S. military. She could also promise those countries that similar atrocities that resulted from a U.S. violation of the U.N. Charter and international law norms will never, ever be repeated." And all this indicates that momentum is building in China to teach Pelosi, if not the entire American regime, a memorable lesson for the U.S. House Secretary's latest crime. And all this indicates that momentum is building in China to teach Pelosi, if not the entire American regime, a memorable lesson for the U.S. House Speaker's latest crime against humanity.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and let us ponder a wise saying from Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, the Holy Prophet's fourth infallible heir. Fear God and know that you will inevitably return to Him. When everyone will see his good and bad deeds right before his or her very eyes, he or she will wish for the longest period of time to separate himself or herself from bad deeds.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, refusal to accept injustice. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we're going to talk about the refusal to accept the injustice. This was an adequate. This was a characteristic that happened, that took place in the life of Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not accept injustice. He stood against injustice. He refused to accept injustice. Among the characteristics of Imam Hussein alayhi salam was the illuminated quality of refusal to accept oppression, so much so that he earned the title of Abi Dayyim. Abi Dayyim in English means one who refuses to be oppressed. This is one of the most well-known titles of the Holy Imam alayhi salam, because His Eminence was a lofty example of this quality. It was he who raised the slogan of human greatness and constructed the path of honor and respect. Thus, he did not bend before the monkeys of Bani Umayyah. He preferred death in the shade of spears. Abdullah Aziz bin Nubata is reported to be saying, "And Hussein alayhi salam considered death with honor as life, and considered life with degradation as death." You know, the famous historian Yaqubi has described His Eminence, has described Imam Hussein as the Shahidul Izza. Shahidul Izza means the most respectable martyr. Imam Hussein was a respectable martyr because he was one who could never accept any injustice. He refused to accept any type of injustice. Whenever he sees that this is not okay, this is against the justice, this is against the way of Allah, Imam Hussein stood and he said no to that. A very important characteristic that Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam had and portrayed to us in order for us to stand and to study from his lifestyle.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the non-acceptance of injustice, the characteristic of non-acceptance of injustice of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. That Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam never in his life accepted injustice. He refused oppression right away when he saw it from the people, when he saw it from anyone who was at the time living, whether it's a ruler or is a sahaba or he's against him or he's with him. So he stood against injustice, and this is a trait that is known of him. People know Imam Hussein to be with this particular characteristics. It's in his character, it's in his personality. Ibn Abil Hadid is reported to be saying, "The chief of the magnanimous ones and destroyer of oppression taught the people that honor and death under the shade of swords is better than acceptance of dishonor. Aba Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam was such that he preferred safety for himself and his companions, but he did not accept humiliation on the basis of his aim, so that it may not be that Ibn Ziyad does not kill them and dishonors them in some way. He preferred death through it, stood bad rulers of the time. He stood to them in a manly way." Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en-islam-page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence fills the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinan has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria.
These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Jamtal Glacier in Austria has been losing around 1 meter of its surface annually. Scientists say the ice is a precious archive that is simply melting away and are surveying the area. Austrian mountain researchers say the glaciers contain an invaluable trove of ancient frozen leaves and twigs and other scientific treasures that can be lost forever. They say the time capsules, including the remote Jamtal Valley, are falling victim to climate change. In the 1990s, tourists found that 5,300-year-old mummy of Iceman near the same area. According to the international data, global warming has raised temperatures in Europe's highest mountains by nearly 2 degrees Celsius in the past 120 years. French rescuers are racing against time to save a beluga whale stranded in Seine River near Paris. The beluga was first spotted stuck between two locks in the river from Paris to the English Channel on Tuesday. Specialists say the animal is undernourished and is refusing food. Warm water is also worsening the health of this creature, which is normally seen near Norway, some 3,000 kilometers to the north. Rescuers say they have only up to 48 hours to save the whale. They are now looking at the possibility of taking the beluga out of the water, treating it, and eventually transferring it out to the sea.
There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, 5 lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Many people develop deeper relationships with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemasia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes. The balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display, as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's latest military assault on the Gaza Strip, codenamed Operation Breaking Dawn, spanned 3 days in early August and killed at least 44 Palestinians, including 16 children. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Belen Fernandez, writer. This article is published under the heading Israeli regime continues to routinize systematic slaughter. Here's more. The Zionist regime's latest military assault on the Gaza Strip, codenamed Operation Breaking Dawn, spent 3 days in early August and killed at least 44 Palestinians, including 16 children. While lethal and non-lethal forms of Israeli regime military torment have continued to be fixtures of daily existence in Gaza even after the Israeli regime's so-called withdrawal from the territory in 2005, Breaking Dawn was the bloodiest episode since the 11-day Israeli regime attack in May 2021, nobly dubbed Operation Guardian of the Walls, which killed more than 260 Palestinians, including 67 children. A bit further back on the timeline, you will find Operation Protective Edge, when the Zionist regime military slaughtered no fewer than 2,251 people in Gaza, among them 551 Palestinian children. For its past, Operation Cast Lead, a 22-day affair that began in December of 2008, eliminated some 1,400 Palestinians, 300 of them children and the vast majority of them civilians. Rewind a bit further to the romantic charm of Operation Summer Rains, which commenced in June 2006 and gave way to the similarly poetic Operation Autumn Clouds. In their book Gaza in Crisis, U.S. scholar Noam Chomsky and scholar Ian Papp posit that Summer Rains constituted the most brutal attack on Gaza since 1967, with the systematic slaughter gradually assuming the air of inertia killing when the continued employment of massive power is done as daily routine and not as the implementation of a policy. Of course, if your state's policy happens to be terror, then seemingly senseless systematic slaughter is one way to implement it. The online version of the Cambridge Dictionary defines terrorism as threats of violent action for political purposes. And indeed, this has pretty much been the name of the Zionist regime's game since it violently founded itself on Palestinian land in 1948, an action that entailed massacring more than 10,000 Palestinians, expelling 750,000 more, and destroying some 500 Palestinian villages. Since then, politically motivated violent action and the threat thereof have remained the order of the day, or of the Breaking Dawn, if you will. Thanks to the U.S.-backed Israeli regime monopoly on the regional discourse and all-out assault on logic, however, the Zionist regime's Palestinian victims are instead the ones vilified as terrorists. In response to this month's bloodbath in Gaza, U.S. President Joe Biden reaffirmed his support for the Zionist regime's security, including its right to defend itself against attack, which is neither a surprising pronouncement from the man who recently enthusiastically self-defined as a Zionist, nor a departure from the tired rhetoric of the U.S. establishment, which holds that the Israeli regime is permanently and indubitably acting in self-defense. Never mind that the whole self-defense line doesn't really fly when you're defending yourself against the people whose land you brutally appropriate and whom you continue to periodically slay in large numbers. It's like saying Mount Vesuvius was defending itself against the people of Pompeii, or that the fish in the proverbial barrel were threatening the security of the person shooting them. The Western corporate media have also done their fair share to ensure the propagation of a pro-Israel narrative in lieu of facts, and rarely is there an Israeli regime military massacre of Palestinian civilians that is not cast as fundamentally the Palestinians' fault or the result of clashes between the two sides. Sure enough, both CNN and Reuters went with clashes in their write-ups of the truce that went into effect on the night of August 7th, as though this was a remotely suitable descriptor for a situation in which 44 people had died on one side and none had died on the other side. Was 5-year-old Alaa Qadoum clashing when she was obliterated by Israeli regime airstrike? Were the other 15 dead children also clashing? The Washington Post saw Operation Breaking Dawn as an example of intense cross-border violence. A similar line was taken by the Associated Press, while the New York Times coverage included nefariously ambiguous reports like Israel and militants straight fire as death toll reaches 24. And yet, the most obvious takeaway from the Zionist regime's maneuvers in the Gaza Strip is the one that cannot be said, that Israel is engaging in straight-up terrorism, at least according to, you know, the Cambridge Dictionary definition. In the end, terrorism is terrorism, whether it occurs under the name Operation Summer Rains or Weeping Wind or Scampering Goats. And as the Zionist regime continues to routinize systematic slaughter and normalize terror, it should also be normal to call the regime out.
Internet Trolls. Part 2. The Internet. What began as an exclusive tool to connect militaries, governments, and then universities has now, more than 60 years later, transformed everything about how modern societies operate and communicate. Today, no one can escape the grasp of social media or evade the mind-boggling connectivity that nearly all humans worldwide now have access to. But few have been prepared for what has also emerged with all this human connectedness. A new and ominous strain of human behavior has been unleashed. Increasingly, people are hiding behind a cloak of anonymity, waiting to provoke, harass, and even threaten anyone they choose. They are called Internet Trolls.
A troll is someone devoting large parts of their life to attacking other people on the internet, basically trying to make that other person's life miserable in some way.
They send things to my home. It terrifies me to think what they could do if they wanted to, knowing exactly where I live, knowing where my children go to school.
Trolls can be a minor annoyance or a life-crippling terror. But what happens if society tries to silence them? Who loses then?
Trolling is a free speech issue. And if you aren't free to hate someone, then you're not free.
I've been associated with all kinds of organized trolling groups. We're stretching the bounds of free speech. You either use it or you lose it. Feelings will be hurt.
Politicians and the courts are now grappling with who really is a dangerous troll.
I've been called troll by very powerful people that should know better.
homophobe, misogynist, racist, all this stuff is just lazy people not wanting to interact.